Good evening, everybody, and welcome. For most of the years that I've been practicing, I almost never listened to Dharma talks online. Once in a while, if I heard a good talk here or at Samish Island, I might listen to it again at home. But that was pretty rare. And in the last couple months, I'm not sure why I decided this, but I've been listening to Dharma talks probably 4 or 5 times a week. And I've really been enjoying it and getting a lot out of it. I've been listening to, on the Everyday Zen website, talks by Norman Fisher and Kathy Fisher. I've been listening to Gil Fronsdell. He, like Norman, is a Dharma heir of Mel Weitzman. Although maybe 10 or 12 years ago, he started to teach in the Vipassana tradition, but he's got, you know, hundreds of talks online. And I've been listening to Jack Duffy. He lives in Whatcom County here, and he's a Dharma heir of Robert Aiken. Most of his talks are about koans, so they're, you know, full of dialogues between Chinese and Japanese teachers and students. You know, very interesting. And there's talks on the Upaya Zen Center website. So it's almost overwhelming, the number of Dharma talks that are available online. But it's been a great resource. And what I thought I would do tonight is just share with you some of the things I've heard in the different teachings that I've most appreciated. So in one of Gil Fronsdell's talks, he described an exercise that he did every day for a year. And that is, he would ask himself every morning, if this was the last day of my life, how would I like to spend it? So I thought, well, that's a really good question. And I thought I would try that myself. So for about the last month, most days, I ask myself that question. You know, once in a while I forget, but when I remember and when I ask that question, it really focuses me. Like, what do I want to do right now? Or what's important right now? It's just, you know, there's really not much confusion or anything. And what I found has been coming up, one thing is I want to make sure that the people I love know that, you know, so that I spend time with my wife and I let her know how I feel and I let my daughter know how I feel, and I've been doing that. And before I was asking this question, I would think, oh, you know, I should, you know, give my daughter a call and tell her this or that, and I meant to, oh, I'll do that, but then, you know, days would go by and I wouldn't do it. And with this exercise, I'm not putting it off, because you never know, you know, how much time you have left to spend with the people you really care about. It's quite a reminder of that. And then the other thing that I've noticed is that I'm even more careful with how I spend my time. I mean, I've been pretty good about that anyway. A lot of times at the end of the day, I'll kind of review the choices I made, and usually I'm pretty happy with it. But with this question, I'm even less likely to just, you know, get on the computer and look at this and that or turn on the television. So it's really been a good exercise for really thinking about how do you want to use your time. So I recommend that you give this question a try, even if you did it for a week. So another talk that I listened to had to do with saying yes to what is, and that there's a freedom in choosing to accept a situation that you don't have any choice about, especially a difficult situation, that there's less suffering if you choose to accept it. So that means that you acknowledge what's happening, you turn towards it, you allow it to be there, and then you try to respond in the best possible way. And in this particular talk, there was a poem by Shodo Harada Roshi, and I hadn't heard of him. He's a Japanese Rinzai priest. He was born in 1940, and he's still alive. And he is the abbot of the Sogenji Temple in Okayama, Japan, but he also founded the One Drop Zen Monastery on Whidbey Island, not far from here. So his poem is called In This Passing Moment. In this passing moment, karma ripens and all things come to be. I vow to choose what is. If there is cost, I choose to pay. If there is need, I choose to give. If there is pain, I choose to feel. If there is sorrow, I choose to grieve. When burning, I choose heat. When calm, I choose peace. When starving, I choose hunger. When happy, I choose joy. Whom I encounter, I choose to meet. What I shoulder, I choose to bear. When it is my death, I choose to die. Where this takes me, I choose to go. Being with what is, I respond to what is. This life is as real as a dream. The one who knows it cannot be found. And truth is not a thing. Therefore, I vow to choose this Dharma entrance gate. May all Buddhas and wise ones help me live this vow. So, a few years ago, I had a minor surgery, and my instructions afterward from the doctor were to avoid all physical exertion for a month. And he said, even be careful going up the stairs. So, I mean, I don't like that. I like to be active, I like to move around, and I really didn't like those instructions. And I remember coming home, and it was early October, and I was standing in my living room, and I'm looking out the window, and I see people, it was 70 degrees out, people are riding their bikes and walking their dogs and jogging by, and I think, you know, God damn it. You know, I don't like this, I don't want to sit here for a month and do nothing, and I spent about 5 minutes complaining to myself. And then I thought, whoa, you know, if you keep this up, you're going to have a really, really bad month, and you're going to drive your wife nuts. So I said to myself, you know, I just have to accept it. I have to make the best of it, which I did. You know, so I thought, okay, I better get some books. I better, you know, figure out some things to do that I can do sitting down. And, you know, the month went pretty well. I missed doing the things that I would have done otherwise, but, you know, I got by pretty well. Much better because I did stop complaining. And my wife's had a number of, you know, kind of big surgeries, knee replacements, rotator cuff surgery, and she's really good at just going through what she has to go through, doing the rehab, no complaining, has a really good attitude, so she's a very good role model for me. And this poem reminds me of one of my favorite passages from this book. This is the book called Buddha by Karen Armstrong. She's a religious writer. She was a nun for 12 or 13 years and then left whatever the order she was in and then has just been writing about religion ever since. This is a biography of the Buddha, but it has quite a bit about Buddhist practice. So I want to read you a section from that. The attainment of nirvana did not mean that the Buddha would never experience any more suffering. He would grow old, get sick, and die like everybody else, and would experience pain while doing so. Nirvana does not give an awakened person trance-like immunity, but an inner haven which enables a man or a woman to live with pain, to take possession of it, affirm it, and experience a profound peace of mind in the midst of suffering. Nirvana, therefore, is found within oneself, in the very heart of each person's being. It's an entirely natural state. It is not bestowed by grace nor achieved for us by a supernatural savior. It can be reached by anybody who cultivates the path as assiduously as the Buddha did. Nirvana is a still center. It gives meaning to life. So I really think this is the same thing that Harada Roshi was talking about in his poem. You know, experiencing difficulty with acceptance. It's not an easy thing to do. It's our nature to want to avoid or deny or resist the things that we don't want. But each one of us can experiment and see if we have less suffering by accepting the things that we don't have a choice about. And I just want to make it clear that acceptance is not a passive experience. It's not, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. It's fully experiencing what you're going through. And it's also thinking about what's the best way to respond. But it's not adding things like, I hate this. This shouldn't be happening. Why is this happening? This isn't fair. You know, all the things we can add to a difficult experience to make it worse. So another talk that I listened to, changing subjects, was on staying on the path of practice. And in this talk, what was mentioned is once you decide to practice the path and you really make a commitment to it, it's always right by your side. It's right next to you. And even if you go off the path, you know, which we all do from time to time for the usual reasons, you know, I'm too busy, maybe I have some doubts whether I ought to be doing this, whether it's worth doing. Maybe laziness or a whole bunch of life events get in the way. But the path is always a step away. So whenever you decide to come back, you can just step right back on. And you don't have to bring any guilt with you. You can just set that down, step back on the path. And the path is always glad to have you back. I liked that part. And it's like a lifetime membership that never expires. So even if you take a break, you know, you can come right back. So another one of the talks touched on the topic of forms in Zen. Now, we have a lot of them. I think some of you, I don't know, might be here for the first time, but, you know, we bow, we chant, we have a way that the Zendo is organized. We have a very definite schedule of, you know, meditation starts and then there's walking meditation. And we have very specific postures to sit in when you're meditating or to walk in when you're doing walking meditation. And I've always liked the explanation that the forms are mindfulness exercises. They help us pay attention. And then once you have a basic understanding of them, you don't have to think about what to do or when to do it or how to do it. It's all laid out for you. And that actually helps you have a much deeper meditation experience. I've certainly found that to be the case. But this talk mentions something different that I had never thought of before. What they talked about was part of Zen practice is to limit you, to intentionally introduce you to limits. You know, if we're in a residential meditation retreat, you get up at a certain time, you come to the meditation hall at a certain time, you sit, you walk, you take breaks at a certain time. None of this is of your choosing. So Zen kind of intentionally puts you up against limits. And then you get a chance to watch how your body and how your mind responds to limits. And what's the best way to respond to limitation. And the value of that is that we run into so many limitations in our day-to-day life. You know, I don't have enough money, I don't have enough time, I'm in a traffic jam, I have a health problem, and it's really valuable to have some experience and some skill at learning, you know, what's the best way to respond to a limitation. So I like that explanation for one of the advantages of the forms, which sometimes are a real pain in the ass, but yeah, they can be useful. Then there's one other thing I wanted to mention. This is a little bit of a change of topic, but it's relevant to practice, at the end of November, my wife and I went to hear Gloria Steinem at the Mount Baker Theater. Did anybody here see her? You did. Okay. It was a great. She was there for an hour and a half, and she was interviewed by someone on the stage. Does anybody not know who she is? Okay, yeah, she's 85 years old. She's been an activist for women's rights, for reproductive rights, probably for 60 years. She's written books. She founded Ms. Magazine. She's one of these rare people who's been an activist kind of in the front lines for all of her life. So it was really a privilege to see her. The place was packed, which was great. It was sold out. A lot of younger people in their 30s and 40s, which I found encouraging. And a couple things really stood out for me. She had lots of energy. Now, usually, you know, some people who are 85 for good reason are, you know, they're a little tired. And, you know, you can see that. But for an hour and a half, she just had plenty of energy. And even though she talked about kind of difficult topics, you know, reproductive rights, domestic violence, politics, women's rights, she just maintained equanimity the whole time. You know, she just had a lot of sort of calmness about her, which is rare when you're talking about these kinds of topics. She said a number of things that I thought were really right in accord with our practice, so I just wanted to go over a couple of them. One of the things she mentioned is if you're going to be an activist, you have to have a support group. It's just not possible to, you know, to stay engaged with these difficult areas year after year after year all by yourself. You have to have a group of people to share your struggles with. You have to have a group of people to help you use your anger at injustice as energy to carry you forward, but to do it in a productive way. She talked about young people will see the injustice and they get mad as hell. And it really helps to have some older people who've been around a while to help them know how to channel that energy and not to act in a way that's either destructive or where they just burn out. And I think that's very much like our Sangha. You know, you are here supporting my practice. For those of you who don't know, Sangha is a Buddhist term. It means the group of people who practice together. So your presence here supports my practice. My presence here supports your practice. And if we have problems, either in here or out in the world, we have our Dharma friends or teachers to talk to about kind of what's going on and how to handle it. And I don't know about you, but I don't think I could go very far or very long all by myself. If I was just meditating at home by myself, I imagine I'd give that up before too long or do it pretty sporadically. So it's been really helpful to have a Sangha. It's one that we consider that one of the three treasures in Buddhism. And that's exactly what Gloria Steinem was talking about. You've got to have company and you've got to have help. And there's one of the people whose writings we most appreciate is a Japanese priest from the 12th century, Eihei Dogen. And in one of his writings, he talked about practicing the way, intelligence or lack of it does not matter. Between the dull and the sharp-witted, there is no distinction. You know, Buddhist practice is open to everyone. And everyone has the potential for, you know, Buddha nature, you know, to kind of reach your highest possibility. There are no distinctions between social class or economic class or ethnic differences in Buddhism. Everyone can practice. And I think Gloria Steinem was saying the very same thing when she talked about we are linked, we are not ranked. And what she meant by that is there can't be liberation for some people and not others. some people are not better than or more deserving of liberation than others. You know, equality belongs to all of us. And then there were just a couple more things. She said that she was optimistic about the future, which is always good to hear, especially from someone who's been working for as long as she has to change things. And one of the reasons why she said so much has changed in her lifetime. When she was a young woman, she said, you know, the pressure to just get married and have children was enormous, and there was hardly any other choice a young woman could make in the 1950s. She said that if you got married in the 1950s, a woman couldn't get a credit card without her husband's permission. And if you got married, you had to change your name to your husband's family name. And if you didn't want to do that, you had to go to court. So, you know, these things are long gone. So that while there's a lot of work to do and a lot of things that are still problems, a lot has changed, and she feels optimistic because of that. And then someone asked her, what should we do now? And she had three things that she said that she recommended. One of them was every day do something outrageous. Do at least one outrageous thing, even if that means leaving the dishes in the sink. And then the other thing she said was be a good listener. You learn a lot more listening to people than you do talking. And then the last thing was to do little, she called them little kindnesses every day in your day-to-day life. And that might mean, you know, having a friendly conversation with the clerk at the store, or if you're walking down the street and you see someone carrying a bunch of packages, maybe you offer to help them. And those things, the little kindnesses, very much remind me of a statement Suzuki Roshi made. He's the person who founded the San Francisco Zen Center in the 1950s. He talked about each one of us shining one corner of the world. And what he meant by that is exactly what Gloria Steinem is talking about. In your day-to-day life, you have the chance to do little kind things, so do those. He called those shining one corner of the world. And that's the same thing that our founding teacher, Norman Fisher, talks about. Whenever he ordains someone as a priest, he gives them three pieces of advice, but then he also gives the rest of us the same advice. And that is, one, be humble. Two, see everyone as Buddha, which means, you know, treat everyone with respect, and you can learn something from everybody, even difficult people. And the third one is try to be helpful. And that's the same thing as a little kindness or shining one corner of the world. So I thought a lot of the things she talked about were very congruent with our practice. And that's what I wanted to talk about tonight. So that's the end of my talk. I didn't bring a watch, so I don't know if we have any time. But if we have, are we out of time? If we have a few minutes, there could be questions or comments. But if we're out of time, we're out of time. How much have we got?
It's 7 minutes.
Okay.